More Business Briefing right now on FM News 101.
And thanks for spending your weekend with us here on FM News 101. Welcome back to Business Briefing. I'm Brian Bushlack. We continue our conversation with Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. Great stuff in our last segment. If you're just joining us here at the bottom of the hour, be sure to podcast on KXL.com. We'll post this audio at 5:07. Pat, there's been some talk recently, again, about mortgage write-downs. And for our listeners out there, what I'm referring to is the folks out there who have been behind on their mortgage payments or are underwater on their mortgage payments, having the balance written down to, I guess, what maybe I would call a mark-to-market, Pat. Do you think we'll actually see this?
You know, I don't know, Brian. I think that it is well worth considering. I do think it has, you know, it's fraught with what they call moral hazard.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to frame the problem, there are about 6.6 million mortgages right now that are 30-day delinquent. There are about 3.7 million mortgages that are seriously delinquent. So we have, you know, we still have a tremendous problem out there. And a lot of these, you know, before anybody goes off the deep end and says, well, you know, blah, 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 it's their fault or whatever, they, you know, a lot of these people are trying to make their payments. A lot of these people want to live in the home. I mean, so let's not get into the, I don't want to get into the judging personal intent here, but I will tell you this, mortgage write-downs are difficult unless they're universally applied or unless they're applied in a very business-like manner. And by that I mean I would personally favor mortgage write-downs if the bank then participates in the ownership of the home. If it is a situation where the lender is going to write down the principal in exchange for taking an equity interest in the home, I think that makes some sense, and it needs to be done in a way that is a valid business investment. And saying, okay, we got a bad loan here, we run the risk of this loan having to foreclose on this loan, we'll lose 35% of our investment or our money if we have to foreclose on this loan. So let's write the loan down, but we get a percentage of the upside or the equity on the sale of the home. I think something like that works. It has to be thought out very, very carefully, because what you do not want to do is tell the marketplace that you can walk away from a loan, or if you can't pay it, you get it written down arbitrarily. It has to be a business decision.
At a percentage, not a dollar amount, a percentage of that uptick if or when it happens.
Absolutely. It has to be done in a way that everybody can look at it and say, okay, that's a business decision. I can understand that. I don't think anybody is getting an unnecessary advantage or a free ride because, you know, we still, I think despite all the talk about strategic foreclosures, we still have a society that wants to pay its debts and feels obligated to pay its debts.
Yep.
And it really, there is no statistical evidence that strategic foreclosures have exceeded past historical experience. In the early 90s, in some parts of the country, there were severe economic recessions, and strategic foreclosures ran about 4.2%. And they have not exceeded that in almost any place right now in this downturn. So we don't want to create an environment in which strategic foreclosures are not only accepted, they're desirable. So we got to be careful here.
And speaking of foreclosures, with Pat Stone from WFG National Title here, Pat, I get the notice of default or NOD listings from WFG every Monday. And it's been interesting. There have been a few weeks where I look at these and I think, you know, maybe things are getting better. And then last week there were a flood of NODs. There just seems to be no real flow here. It's what's going on with that?
Well, a little bit of that is a structural process. A lot of that is systems. Again, that almost is analogous to what we're talking about, data points. I think you need to look at this in quarterly and semi-annually annual numbers. We will work through this over the next 3 or 4 years. I actually expect foreclosures in the U.S. to top 1 million for at least the next 4 years. And it won't be an even flow. It is not a uniform even flow. But if you look at it over a period of time, we have bottomed in the real estate market. We have seen the worst, but we will have significant foreclosures over the next 4 years.
Yeah, I saw in Bloomberg about a week or so ago, headline, home prices seen dropping 10% in U.S. on foreclosures. And it said as many as 1.25 million, you nailed it, 1.25 million of America's least cared for homes are headed for auction after a year-long probe into foreclosure practices kept them off the market. This is interesting because this is that shadow inventory that we've talked about. Do you see this as being that big of a problem?
No. I just hate the term shadow inventory. There is shadow inventory. There's shadow demand. Historically, they've always balanced out. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on the shadow inventory thing. I will tell you that there was a cessation of foreclosure activity because of the robo-signing concerns.
Yeah.
Foreclosure activity has picked back up. But what is also going on in the market that doesn't get spoken to is the fact that new construction has trailed household formation significantly over the last 4 years and will continue to trail household formation over the next 4 or 5 years. So we are using up the existing stock of homes fairly rapidly right now. And that plus the idea of REO rentals will take a lot of the pressure off created by a surge in foreclosures.
Okay, that's why I asked, because I know we talked about this before off the air, and I know you always have talked about the fact that, you know, we did overbuild extremely during about a 4 or 5 year period there, but since then it's fallen off a cliff, and you've always been a very big proponent of the fact that this slack inventory, there's plenty of demand for it, right?
Yes, there's demand for it. As the economy gradually improves, you have first-time home buyers emerge. I think the real gating issue for me right now, Brian, is CFPB. And it looks like we're going to have some final rules on forms and regulations probably by the end of the year. By this time next year, your mortgage underwriting function should return to a little bit more of a normal manner, or a little bit more of a normal set of requirements. And we will, I don't see them loosening the gates. Opening the gates, and I don't see them completely dropping underwriting standards, but I see them being more rational than they are right now. And what I'm saying here is that the average primary loan last month had a 750 FICO score. This is absolutely, that's unsustainable. That does not fulfill the needs for housing in America, and it's probably not necessary. But underwriting standards are very tight right now. Average loan-to-value was about 76%. So underwriting standards have been very, very high. When you get the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau rules in place, lenders can adjust to the new rules, and they will figure out how to adjust to them. About a year out, you will see a lot of first-time home buyers emerge because the economy will have 4 to 5 years of slow healing. We will have rules that we can live with in terms of underwriting. And, again, the new construction is trailing household formation.
Live and local here on a Sunday afternoon on FM News 101. You're listening to Business Briefing. I'm Brian Bushlack alongside Patrick Stone on the phone with us from WFG National Title. A couple minutes to talk about inflation. You touched about this in our first segment briefly, Pat, or I guess I should say the lack thereof. Why is this inflation thing such a hot button?
I think, Brian, the underlying driver behind the conversation around inflation is the contest of ideologies, which is heightened by this being a political year, a presidential election year. And people that advocate tight money, austerity, balancing the budget now, are looking for signs that loose money and physical priming of the pump is resulting in inflation. I think even people that are advocating aggressive fiscal and monetary policy are watching to make sure that inflation doesn't happen or that they react to it. So there is a tremendous focus on inflation, and we're back to looking at data points. And we tend to react very quickly with opinions about data points. Now, as we've talked before, the Fed has a dual mandate, and that mandate is 2% inflation and 5% unemployment. Obviously, unemployment at 8.1% or 8.2% is significantly above the mandate. Inflation is running about 2.7%, so it's a little bit above the mandate. You know, we've talked a little bit before about the core drivers of inflation. They have historically been twofold, capacity utilization and labor. And capacity utilization, there seems to be a correlation between about 82 to 86% capacity utilization. That is how busy your factories and your production capacity is. If you get over somewhere between 82 to 86%, you start to see prices go up because they can't produce more goods, so they raise the prices. Labor, if you get unemployment under 6%, you tend to see some labor inflation because you have to pay more. Both capacity utilization at about 78% and unemployment in excess of 8% would argue that there's very little restraint on either capacity or labor. So what we've seen in inflation to date is the impact of commodity prices and oil. Energy has been a big problem. We've talked before about the impact, the geopolitical impact of Iran threatening to close the Strait of Hormuz. We've talked about last year about the Arab Spring and how that impacted oil. Oil prices are artificially high right now. Commodity prices get impacted by weather, one-time events, shocks to the system. So we've had some commodity prices. Now, I will tell you, that most economists are just slightly concerned over import prices going up. And import prices have been going up, especially in stuff like apparel. But they're not out of control. So we're at 2.7%. Should we be worried about inflation? I think we should always be mindful of it. I think the Fed needs to be mindful of it. Am I personally worried about it? No. Do I think it is an immediate issue? I do not, because of capacity and labor. A lot of additional capacity and labor.
When we come back, we'll talk about the Fed with Pat Stone. Have they overstepped their bounds? That's up next on Business Briefing.